The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Try that again. Good morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Thursday the 25th, 2025, and you're on the clock with Aaron Green. And I have to tell you all a secret. Somebody very special, somebody very nice, send me a bag of juju in September. A bag of juju in September. Now, listen, I ain't touched the bag yet. Producer, I ain't pick up the bag yet, but I had the person who holding the bag looking the bag, because when the person said they have juju for me, I swear to God they meant hog plum, right? But it's juju. Juju in September. So I say this for two reasons, right? Go check your juju tree. See if any juju's on it. See if it's blossoming. Plenty of juju trees. See, that's what a lot of juju trees are blossoming right now, to see fruit bearing is an amazing thing. Plus, the tree that these juju came from, the person said, there's ripe fruit dropping, there's green fruit on the tree, and there are new buds on the tree as well, all at the same time. So I just want to say thank you to that listener for that yummy, scrummy delight. Again, hog plum on the ground, sea grape on the ground, avocado on the ground. It's a wonderful time to be alive in the Bahamas, indeed. And I thank the Lord that I am alive after a most interesting experience this morning at the East Street Wolf Road intersection. First of all, what's happening with the traffic on Shirley Street? For the last few days, up to 9:30, 9:45, traffic is backed up beyond Johnson Road. Jam up. Well onto Shirley Street, right? I had to turn off again this morning. Yesterday was much better. The day before was the same thing. Tuesday was a bit rough. Monday was horrible. What's happening on the Eastern Road and Shirley Street to cause such a massive backlog of traffic at 9:30 after the peak traffic hours, right? It couldn't be the rain. It couldn't be rainwater in the road, right? That's not it. Standing water in the road isn't causing people to drive like they just learned how to drive yesterday. That's not what it is. Is it that people haven't figured out that to navigate wet roads safely, all you need to do is put down your phone? Like, you have hundreds of cars behind you. But you have no concern for the flow of traffic because you're on your phone call. And how do we know you're on your phone call? The way that you veer off the road every 35 seconds, every 40 seconds. That's how we know. But this morning at the Wolf Road and East Street intersection, the lights went off. The lights went off, and that intersection quickly turned into a raceway. I want to say good morning to whoever authorized the individual this morning to drive taxi plate TN0128. It's a silver Serena Nissan. Dear Royal Bahamas Police Force, why you don't take that license from the person who's driving that vehicle this morning? Right? Here's what happened. Despite cars attempting to operate a four-way stop properly, That taxi driver cut off 4 cars attempting to move through the intersection by making a sharp right turn from East Street southbound onto Wolf Road westbound from the northbound lane on East Street north. Yeah. That boy have a service license. That boy has been authorized to drive people around the place. And all I want to know is who in the government of the Bahamas decided that enforcing traffic controls was the thing we were going to do away with? Who decided that? Was it the insurance companies? Did they help you all this? Was it the healthcare sector? Did they help you all this? Who decided that the thing we're not going to do is enforce traffic controls? I want to say good morning to the bus driver. I think it was JNO472. It's on that East Street route. How do people get these licenses? And then you see them on the road doing foolishness regularly, and somehow they're still able to hold these licenses. These licenses are supposed to be like gold. Only the most well-behaved citizens and most accomplished citizens, I mean. Anyway, I have a guest joining me in studio this morning. Miss Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas is joining us this morning. We're talking about two things. We're talking about bodily autonomy, and we are talking about the International Safe Abortion Day that takes place or is held September. Yeah. Miss Wallace, you're in the Zoom room?
Good morning. I'm here.
Good morning. Let me read these three texts because they're talking about juju. They may have a secret for me, and then we're going to get right into this discussion. Oh, a text says, good morning. The U.S. Embassy is open on Shirley Street. Do you think that's what's causing the backlog? That people don't know how to navigate to or past the U.S. Embassy? The U.S. Embassy open, that's why traffic is backed up way past Johnson Road every morning, and nobody has determined that they need a strategy to deal with that? Okay, no problem. Here's the next text. Aaron, my neighbor has jujus also, big juicy ones. Tree has buds and little ones also. Okay. Now, are they downs? When you say they big juicy ones, are they the downs, which is family to the juju, but some of them could grow as big as a tennis ball? All right, last text. I've been considering that a part of the driving test should be the ability to drive at 30 miles an hour. It is completely unreasonable for someone to be on the Eastern Road driving 15 to 20 miles an hour. That one car could add an extra hour to the morning commute for hundreds of persons. The time increases exponentially the further you are in the line. I'm telling you, like this text, this is science. This is science. People get certified to create strategies and to manage traffic. Okay, two quick tests. Ms. Wallace, are coming right now. This text says there was an accident on the light at Shirley Street and Hawkins Hill. Thank you, text. I wonder about the other mornings where we're experiencing the same type of backlog. I know that somebody cut holes in the road in the middle of the rainy season and did not pack them with temporary fill until they were able to come and pave them, knowing that they weren't going to pave them, they're just going to cold patch them. All right. Good morning, Ms. Wallace.
Good morning.
How are you?
I am doing well. How are you?
I am good, thank you. I just have to add, I'm a little upset that you're on via Zoom, but then I also understand the traffic situation coming from the area that you are located in right now, and I wouldn't ask you to navigate that to try come to the studio for this time. You see what I'm saying?
Absolutely. It's a little rough out there.
Yeah, absolutely. So this morning, we're talking about bodily autonomy, International Safe Abortion Day. But before we get there, you're having an event this evening, a session, a working session for Feminist Standards for Governance?
Yes, we are. We are continuing our process of inviting people to join us in building from 2026 to 2031. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at different thematic areas in each workshop. So the one this evening is looking at labor and economy. So we're asking people to come and share issues that come to mind when they think about labor and economy that they would like to address.
Mm-hmm.
And just brainstorm for a while as a group. And then we settle on one issue that we want to do a deep dive in. And it's quite a challenge for the brain to think in this way, because we're very accustomed to talking about issues and not so much digging into why those issues exist and who's responsible for maintaining systems that fail us, and how do we get to the other side? How do we turn it around? And that's really what the sessions are designed to help us to do together in groups. So it actually turns out to be a lot of fun, and we get to learn from each other throughout the process. So that is this evening at 6 o'clock. We'll be meeting at Poinciana Paper Press, which is at 12 Parkgate Road.
Okay. Okay. And there are lots of issues in the media right now pertaining to labor. We have the discussion about the livable wage and a minimum wage increase, right? Like the process to a livable wage. We have discussions about a bi-weekly versus a monthly pay schedule in the public domain. We have issues around maternity and paternity leave in the public domain. And then we have issues around underemployment also. It's been in the media for the last 2 to 3 weeks, a month easily.
Yeah, these are some of the issues that have come up in our sessions as well. And it's really been interesting to see how these issues sit in multiple thematic areas. So unemployment, for example, could come up when we're talking about labor and economy, but it could also come up in a session that's focused on youth. The livable wage has come up when we were talking about labor and economy, but it has also come up in other thematic areas because it affects so many parts of our lives. It affects our ability to pay for healthcare that isn't covered by NHI, for example. So how are we dealing with autoimmune diseases and degenerative diseases where people aren't able to access care, that are not able to afford medication or the kinds of treatments that they need, and these things aren't covered by NHI? How do we do it? What is the problem? And it usually comes down to income.
And it can be such a complicated or multi-layered issue, because you may have a reasonable amount of money, right? Or you may earn a reasonable amount of money, but that service is not offered by the public healthcare system, and you don't have enough money to access it in the private healthcare system. So it exists here, but it's still inaccessible by the average person.
Yeah, conversations come down to this difference between availability and accessibility. Just because it's available doesn't mean that everyone can access it. So we have a lot of conversations about the difference between those things.
Okay, awesome. So again, tonight, Thursday the 25th of September, 6 p.m., Poinciana Paper Press, 12 Parkgate Road. Right? Tell people how they can register for the event.
You can register on our LUMA page. So you can go to LUMA.MA/feministstandards. And if that's difficult to remember, you can just go to our Facebook page or our Instagram page. It's facebook.com/equality242.
Mm-hmm.
If you type in Equality Bahamas in the search, you might have some difficulty finding it because algorithms and all kinds of things. But if you directly type in facebook.com/equality242, it will come right up and you will see the link to register.
Absolutely. Now, also very quickly, Equality Bahamas has a feminist book club, right?
We do.
And for October, you guys are reading Village Weavers by Miriam J.A. Chansey?
Yes, we're very excited to be reading another Caribbean book this year. We read a book from a different Caribbean author for September. And October, we're looking at Village Weavers, which was actually the fiction prize winner of the OCM Focus Literary Prize. And that is usually announced at the Bocas Lit Festival in Trinidad and Tobago. So we were watching to see which book would win. We saw that the short list, we got very excited, and we were really happy to see that Miriam J.A. Chansey won.
Mm-hmm.
And we quickly added that to the lineup. So that's what we're reading in October. And we haven't even told anybody yet, but she will actually be joining us for the meetings. We'll be able to engage with her and ask our questions about the book as well. So it's a great opportunity to engage, read a book, and be able to bring those questions, bring your ideas, and any other thoughts that you had about the book. And not an opportunity that we often get, and we're really excited to be able to share that with folks. So if anybody wants to join Feminist Book Club, the link to register for that is tiny.cc/FBC, like Feminist Book Club, 2025.
All right.
And you can also get that on our Facebook page or our website.
All right. Last year, for 16 days of activism, you had an author speaking, and we were able to meet the author via Zoom. The topic was resilience is a myth. And
that's the title of her book. That was Soraya Chemaly, who's also Bahamian living in the U.S.
Bahamian living in the U.S.?
Yes.
Oh, man, that's super cool. What I appreciated about the book was the central sort of theme or premise, which is that we have misconstrued what reliance means, and it's not a one man is an island concept. It's that one man can navigate the seas if they can understand where safe harbor is, if they can understand where resources are, if they can identify people who can assist them when they need assistance, that is actually what resilience is.
Yeah, she completely reframes resilience. And everyone who read the book with us for Book Club last November really had a lot to think about, because in the book, she presents different cases to support her ideas. Mm-hmm. And the first few sections or chapters were very fascinating because she was also looking at gender and what we think about strength, and how in the sport of running, she was saying that usually men are considered more powerful and faster, but that's only true up to a certain distance. When it comes to long distance, women are better. And she started talking about the ways that women tend to be more resilient for various reasons, because of our ability to kind of conserve our energy, so that we embed ourselves in and build community, and how it's really community that helps you to survive. So it was a really interesting book. She actually has a new book coming out in October or November called All We Want Is Everything. And I was just in touch with her last week, actually, and she'll be joining us again during the 16 Days campaign. So stay tuned for more information about that.
Absolutely. So, Ms. Wallace, next month is Older Persons Month nationally, Bahamas Older Persons Month. I'm begging you now to assist me in creating a panel of older Bahamian women and or Caribbean women to join the conversation, so we could talk about resilience from a not just from the gender perspective, but also from a generational perspective as well.
That sounds great. I like that plan a lot. Let's talk more about it.
Okay, absolutely. Now let's get to the topic, bodily autonomy. Now, I have a personal vibe with bodily autonomy. A cat adopted my back porch. And the cat does not want to be a tame cat, but the cat wants to be fed regularly because they figured out they could work a little scheme. But this cat keeps rubbing up on my legs, right? And people keep telling me, oh, you should love, the cat loves you and the cat just wants to, you know, be close to you. And I'm telling them, no, the cat's using me like a scratching post. There is no love. There is no communication, right?
It's very one-sided.
Yes, extremely. And the cat just is, because it won't allow me to groom it, the cat is just using my leg as a rubbing post. And here I am trying to have it with this non-speaking being, right? And I know the cat understands me and does not care about my instructions. Anyway, that's one of my experiences with bodily autonomy.
Very instructive. I think that really helped people to connect.
But tell us, what does bodily autonomy mean in the fullness, in the full scope of the term?
Bodily autonomy is the authority or the power that we have to make decisions freely without any coercion or without threats of violence about our own bodies. So we can decide how we move our bodies, how we even dress, present ourselves, and what we do with our bodies. And that's from shaking somebody's hand, hugging somebody, participating in sexual activity, anything that has to do with the body, we have the ability to make the decision.
I get you. Okay. Some examples in the Bahamas, or some examples in life where people's bodily autonomy is often challenged.
It starts very young. And we talk parents, guardians, other family members often force children into situations that they don't actually want to be in. So you'll see people coaxing a child to go and hug somebody or sit on someone's lap or kiss somebody, doing all these things with their bodies mm-hmm. that they are very clearly saying they don't want to do, or they might not be saying it, but they're sort of standing stiffly, right? Like, no, please don't make me take those 3 steps forward. I don't want to sit on this person's lap. I don't want to hug this person. And there are a lot of ways that we wrongly categorize certain behaviors as rude mm-hmm. or disrespectful, not realizing that as adults, we have a responsibility not only to respect children, toddlers, other people, but also to protect the people who are in our care mm-hmm. and not force them into situations that are uncomfortable. And it might not even be that the situation itself, you know, hugging the uncle or whoever it is particularly unsafe, but we are creating a very unsafe behavior by teaching children that they have to ignore their own feelings and that they're responsible for other people's feelings. So you don't want to make so-and-so feel bad, hug them. So we're teaching them that, you know, your feelings actually aren't that important. Your safety isn't important. What's important is that you're a good girl or you're an obedient boy.
Mm-hmm. An example, tell me if this fits within the scope of the definition or the issue. I hear new parents, new mothers typically, talking about wanting to create boundaries, right, for interacting with their newborns and their babies. And I find that in the telling of these stories, they talk about kind of overbearing family relatives who insist the baby, hugging the baby, and ignoring the risks of transmitting germs, bacteria, and diseases and infections. For instance, the proliferation of herpes is so wide that it's not necessarily included or typically included on a general or basic STI panel, right? So people are not being tested for herpes, and then people may be unaware that they have it, right? Or unaware that they're in a contagious phase, and then they want to pick up your baby and they want to kiss your baby and rub their face on your baby's face or your baby's belly. And mothers are saying, hey, I have the right to create this and reinforce this boundary. And it's not just, I'm not just a sensitive mother, right? I'm not just going through postpartum depression. I'm in my right mind. I'm emotionally sound, and I'm attempting to create a boundary for my child who cannot create the boundary for themselves.
Yes, completely. And we hear mothers complaining about this all the time because they do want to share the joy, right, of this newborn, and they want their families and friends to enjoy the experience of visiting with the baby, but they also want to keep themselves and their babies safe. Mm-hmm. And again, it is so common for people to place their own needs, their own desires over the well-being of the people around them and the people who they claim to love. And it's important that we have these conversations, as uncomfortable as they may be, because, you know, when people start to feel guilty, they kind of want to push back and say, well, no, that's not acceptable. Why would you assume that I have herpes? And it's not an assumption that's being made. It is a defense mechanism that is hormonal. Mm-hmm. And it's also common sense for mothers, for birthing parents, for all parents, and for people who have the responsibility to care for newborns, but also caring for other people, right? It could be caring for people who are immunocompromised, people who are elderly, people who are in palliative care and things like that. We have a responsibility to take care of them. And we have to get people to understand that it's important to decenter the self sometimes. Mm-hmm. We have bodily autonomy, and we have to respect the bodily autonomy of other people. So this is where we have that conversation about, yes, my rights are important, but my rights end where somebody else's oppression begins. So I feel like I want touch. The baby smells so good. The baby is so cute. I want to hold the baby close. I want to kiss the baby because that will make me feel good. Mm-hmm. Okay, but what about the baby? what about responsibility for the baby? What kind of fear, what kind of anxiety are you causing? But also what kinds of health concerns are you causing that could actually manifest later on?
All right. So while you were talking, I thought of two things, right? I saw a story recently in a courtroom about a dispute between a client and a service provider. The service being provided was a cuddling service, right? And I was thinking that there's a sort of thin line to walk when you talked about palliative care, which is the care for sick people and care for terminally ill people, sick people and elderly, right? Sort of geriatric care. They kind of move in the same space. I was thinking about the importance of touch, right? Because the science and research has shown that healthy touch is very important for human development, and not just as a child, but as we mature into adulthood and then we mature into our senior life, right? But how do we then ensure that those who are under our care, particularly those who are like in palliative service or are disabled and are unable to communicate, right? How do we ensure that they can receive healthy touch? Right? But also in a way where you are considering their wants and their boundaries, right?
Right.
Go on.
No, you go ahead.
A conversation that has arisen in the local media, the question of hairstyles and grooming in schools, right? And so if we have a moment, the need I think there is a need, the need to balance, and maybe balance isn't the correct word here, the right to bodily autonomy and the need to maintain order in large public, I want to say public spaces, because it's public in the context of my bodily autonomy, public spaces like schools.
I find this the whole conversation that's happening right now around school uniforms and the haircuts and all this extremely interesting, because the responses from the public, whether they have children or not, whether they're directly affected or not, really clue us into the ways that colonialism has taken root.
Mm-hmm.
And the ways that we look at what we are calling rules and regulations, seeing them as hard and fast and unchanged, rather than exploring the possibilities of changing or making adjustments to rules and regulations as we learn more about ourselves and the world that we're living in, and as we make decisions about the world that we're trying to build. Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of comments on, you know, social media posts about this, saying rules are rules and children are going to have to grow up and they're going to have to get into jobs where there are also rules. And so this is a good training ground for them to know. And they're not saying it in this way, but basically to know that your self-expression doesn't matter. No one really cares about who you are or how you want to be or how you want to move through this world. All we know is that you need to wear a certain thing. You need to look a certain way in order to make the money to survive this life. Everything else is out the window. And I wonder why it's so difficult for people to think about creating a different way of being and finding different ways to teach young people, to teach students about rules and regulations and how to follow them, and that it is possible and completely acceptable and necessary to challenge rules and regulations when they no longer work for us, when they no longer apply to the changing world that we're living in.
Or they have no moral value.
Right. And what does it mean that, you know, we decided that some Black child's hair is 1 inch and we want it to be a quarter of an inch? What does it mean that we then take that child out of school and tell them that, you know what, you don't get access to education today because I don't like the way your hair looks.
I don't like that 3/4 inch extra.
And we know that the same rule does not apply to children with other kinds of hair, right? It only applies to the afro.
The perceived nappy head. In fact, right. I was thinking when the responses that I was seeing, it's a policing of Blackness. An African indicates that there's still a large degree of or lack of self-awareness, right? And self-identity, like what it means to be an African, right? We got a lot of people of African descent, but is their identity tied to what it means to be an African, right? And so I see the whole conversation and how it is unfolding in the language that's being used. It just presents to me as a desperate attempt to police blackness and Africanness, because we still believe that those things are detrimental to your own success. And but what does that mean when you are an African and that's the lesson that's literally being beaten into you? It's a psychological beating, right? And God forbid if schools are administering corporal punishment because your hair is too long or it is not groomed to our standard. Right? Like, we are reinforcing this colonial anti-blackness and anti-Africanness.
Yes, and we're seeing multiple things come together here. It's the anti-blackness. It is, for many, internalized racism, right? And a very specific anti-black racism. Mm-hmm. And it is this desire to really wield power over people who are considered to be less than. So for a lot of adults, children are less than them. And mm-hmm. these are the people that you get to control, and they just have to listen to you. And confusing respect for fear, young people fearful, mm-hmm. and limiting their ability to be full human beings and calling that respect. Mm-hmm. And we should know as adults, as people who've been here for longer than the students that are in school right now, that people are always going to find ways to express themselves. Mm-hmm. And the more we put limitations on it, the further they're going to go outside of what we find acceptable mm-hmm. to finally express themselves. So it could be through hair. We've decided that it's not going to be through clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Every child in all of these schools has to wear a uniform, and the uniform has to be worn in a particular way. And in addition to that, even the accessories, the belt, the shoes, the socks, everything has to be a certain color. So there are limitations there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if they can afford it, they can express themselves a little bit through the school bag that they choose. That's pretty much the limit. And then you have your hair.
Yep, that's it.
But if you take that away, how do I get to say this is who I am?
Yeah.
Is it through their behavior? Is it through the way that they speak, the volume of their voice? They're searching for another way.
Wallace, we got a caller on the line. And when we get back from the caller, I want to talk about how the car, when we are trying to reclaim our bodily autonomy and we don't know how in this colonial system. And then I want to talk about examples of bodily autonomy in healthcare and medical decisions, and then International Safe Abortion Day. Good morning, caller.
Hey, morning, Ms. Green and your guests. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I just have a quick question for you and your guests, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you guys feel about capital punishment in the schools?
Oh, Ms. Wallace, you want to go first and then I'll go?
I am completely opposed to corporal punishment. I have written about this a few times in my weekly column. I see it as connected to the culture of violence that we have, mm-hmm. and as a way of teaching young people, teaching students that when somebody upsets you, when somebody does something that you think is wrong, when somebody crosses a line, your defense, your response is physical violence.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to demonstrate that we have the ability to address conflicts, to address issues in other ways.
Yeah. For me, a couple of things. I oppose it because I think it is counter-effective or ineffective to apply that strategy in the historic, social, cultural dynamic of the Bahamas. I think that beating students is counterproductive and reinforces the wrong message. I think that the way that we do it is wrong also. I think parents should be present when it happens, or a parent, like if you're going to do it, a parent should be called in. There should be counseling before corporal punishment is administered, because sometimes the parent is the problem, right? And so you're only reinforcing a trauma or a violence that is actually at the root of their disruptive behavior, right? And then in the same way as I don't agree with capital punishment, I question, do our systems have the integrity to justify the application of corporal punishment to people who are supposed to be in your care? You know, that's like the parent that wants to beat the 10-year-old child for behavior that the parent encouraged, inculcated, or ignored as they were growing up. And now you want to beat the child because you're frustrated. You got to beat yourself first because you are the root of the problem. Miss Wallace, I get the phone line is lit up. Let's go to another call. Good morning, caller.
Morning. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know about that part. I think y'all been going to the extreme. I remember when I was in school, and it was a control punishment, a spank or whatever, and it didn't bother me. I am a productive citizen.
When were you in school, sir?
This was way. That was 1978, 79.
Cool.
Way back then.
I think there's been a shift. Mm-hmm. In, I want to use the word temperament, right? Mm-hmm. In teachers over the last, let's call it 40 years, 50 years.
Well, be honest with you, my brother, Mr. Johnson, retired, deceased now. Mm-hmm. He was a disciplinary headmaster, whatever you call it. And his methods really, really, really worked. He had a combination of what we're talking about. If you call it spanking or whatever, and also you had other measures of punishing a student, you know, a detention or something. And his style, method, I think it's methods that you can use today, but I don't think the child or the adult or the teenager should just get off the hook. There must be some measure
of
accountability,
yes,
for the parent and the child.
Yes.
Because the Bible speaks about spoil the rod, you know, you The rod.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yeah, spare, right. Excuse me, you know. So I'm saying it's control and certain persons.
Let me ask you this question.
Uh-huh.
For me, I don't have any children, but for me, I would be upset and concerned, more than upset, right? Manage my emotions, get rational. I would be concerned that you are letting people who, like, imagine a teacher that runs a red light or a stop sign, you cannot beat my child because you don't know how to moderate your own behavior. You don't know how to govern yourself. And what's to say that you know how to moderate your actions when you've beaten my child? What's to say that you're not going to lose control and administer a force that is not warranted, right? That's a part for me. People who run red lights and stop signs can't beat children.
Yeah, because I think right now in the schools, only certain persons deal with that.
Administrators.
They are controlled. They know how to punish the child in a way rather than letting anybody punish the child. Now, back then when me and you were growing up, anybody could just sort of sign and you go home and get more.
See,
but I'm just saying today.
For me,
today now it is controlled, and even corporal punishment. I think the death penalty should be revisited. It is in the book, but there are different methods of death penalty now. They don't have to hang the person. You have lethal injection and other things like that. I have no problem with the death penalty, but we can modernize it. We have to be very, very careful because the same child that you're protecting, the other lady on the line, I hope if she has a child, one day, if she don't discipline her child, the child is going to embarrass her.
Okay.
And don't even check for her.
Corporal punishment isn't the only form of discipline, and I actually think that
it's
the least
form of discipline.
Yeah, so I'm
just asking her, do you have any kids?
That's okay. So we not, that's a, but it's that straw man. That's a straw man argument to suggest that if you don't have any kids, then your opinion does not hold the same weight as the opinion of people who have kids. That's not the approach we take in this morning. Caller, I gotta ask you to hold the line or call back after the break. Miss Wallace, after this break, we are going to get into all of that because I want to reference incident at the E.P. Roberts Primary School that happened recently we go into a break. Stay tuned to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on the clock. We'll be right back.
Get ready to swing for a cause. The 4th Annual Rebuilding Villages Charity Golf Tournament, brought to you by Cleft of the Rock Foundation in proud partnership with the Bahamar Foundation. Join us on Sunday, October 5th at the world-class Royal Blue Golf Course at Bahamar in Nassau, the Bahamas, for a day of championship golf, community, and impact. This isn't just another tournament. It's a chance to change lives. Every putt, every drive, every swing supports programs like Parenting on Purpose and Disciplines for Life, empowering families across the Bahamas with education, awareness, and hope. Don't miss this unforgettable event, the 4th Annual Rebuilding Villages Charity Golf Tournament, October 5th. To register or learn more, visit cleftoftherockfoundation.org or email cleftoftherockfoundation@gmail.com.
Family and friends, it's time to come together and celebrate, reminisce, and honor the life and legacy of our brother, Clifford Riley, who touched so many lives. This Sunday, September 28th, all roads lead to the Miles E. Monroe Diplomat Center, BFM, for the Big Bra Memorial Concert. Yes, I am. Featuring Devon Roll and Barack, Mr. Landlord, Sammy Starr, Solo, Antonio Roll, Mr. Blacks, Apostle Jan Jones, Sherwin Gardner, Rico Alris, Monty Sweat, VMAC, Najia, Mr. J, Peter Runks, Mr. Beads, Iman, Ali Akoli, Adriana Munnings, Akeem Gardner, Shabak, Young Wisdom, Revolution Praise Team, DJ Godson in the building, and so many more. Let's come together. This Sunday, 28th of September, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Diplomat Center. Admission is free. However, generous donations from your organization and love offering will be greatly appreciated.
This project, Father God, is completed, it is done. And Father God, you got glory, you get honor all of it.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 Smart Talk all day.
Don't wait for a storm to arrive. Stock up on hurricane supplies, make home repairs, purchase a generator, and more this hurricane season with a Fidelity personal loan. Make that move today. Call 356-7764.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Good morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green. I have Alicia Wallace, founder and director of Equality Bahamas, joining me this morning. We're talking about bodily autonomy and International Safe Abortion Day. For the majority of the discussion, I guess we've been focused on sort of issues surrounding young people and bodily autonomy and balancing, right? Balancing issues of bodily autonomy with or engaging bodily autonomy and personal development, right? For young people. Ms. Wallace, the phone line is lit up. I get a bunch of texts. Let's go to the phone line quickly. Good morning, caller.
Ms. Green?
Yes.
I'd like to speak to Ms. Green, please.
This is Ms. Green. Good morning. You're on there.
I tried to get you yesterday, but I didn't have no luck. Yesterday, you were talking about policing, right?
Yes, and
okay.
Traffic.
Your traffic. You sitting down? Because I know you can just fall down when I tell you this.
I'm sitting down.
Okay. I don't call the police station, but this car, the police car, howling in the back of me, howling. You know, there's a siren. Then I park, I pull over on the side, then I pull over on the side. The lady came out with lunch. Lunch. That's all I got to say.
I got you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Good morning, caller. Good morning, caller. Hi, you on there?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good, good.
Yes. Okay, I you said that you think the parents should be there when the child getting punished. I think that's a horrible idea. That can cause fight.
What can cause fight?
You can imagine a behemoth now.
Uh-huh.
In 2025, mm-hmm. sit down and watch someone beat their child with all this violence going on in Nassau. Boy, that end up, boy, that's a, hey, what do young people say? That's a movie.
Yeah, I think I'm wondering, you know, because we have this sort of, Ms. Wallace, here we go. We have a kind of bystander culture where we don't want to get involved, right? And then we have this culture where we say, hey, it's a parent's job to raise that child, and I don't have the right to get in that or to tell a parent what to do. But I want to challenge that today, because if that were the case, we wouldn't have a Child Protection Act. Right? We wouldn't need a Child Protection Act. And I am, but I also know that Bahamians culturally, we take up for the underdog. And we don't ever want to see or tolerate somebody that is obviously the weakest person in the dynamic being taken advantage of. We don't like that at all. And so I don't know. I think people will watch, but if it goes to the extreme, I can use a term that we like to use loosely in our everyday language. If a parent if you feel like they literally trying to slap that child's head off, if you feel like they are causing brain damage or bodily injury, people step in. People are going to step in. I think I would step in at the risk of being hit or assaulted by that parent. If I think that the parent is at risk of injuring that child, I can step in. And I think most Bahamians would. And I think that you can step in a way that does not diminish the authority of the parent over the child. Ms. Wallace?
Yes, I'm here.
There you go. Okay, so International Safe Abortion, the theme is Safe Abortion is Life-Saving Health Care. Does Equality Bahamas have any activities planned for that day?
We don't have activities that day aside from our social media activity, where we will be sharing more information about abortion. We realize through our conversations and our engagement through traditional media that there is understanding of what the process really is, about why it's necessary, what our rights are under international human rights standards and mechanisms that the Bahamas has signed on to,
mm-hmm.
what the law says and what the reality is on the ground.
Mm-hmm. What the law says on the ground locally, and, you know, things like what's the difference between a termination and an abortion?
Right. And the different phases and what is available at what time. I think mm-hmm. there's the idea that every abortion is a surgical abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that most abortions are actually medical,
yeah.
using medicine.
And I think many people think that any termination is an abortion, an illegal act, but that's not necessarily the case.
Right. So kind of demystifying for people, because it's not something that we are taught in school. It's not something that you really hear about in the news, except for very recently when a doctor was charged. So we want to share the information so everyone is aware.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that everyone will not be in support of abortion, which is very unfortunate because it's quite beneficial. And as the theme this year makes very clear, it is healthcare and it does save lives.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that when abortion is not accessible, when it's criminalized, people are forced to seek other means. And in many cases, those are unsafe means.
Absolutely. I want to encourage people to not just listen to your pastor about what abortion is, but listen to doctors who have to perform them. Listen to doctors and their experiences about what abortion is. So, Ms. Wallace, we are at the end of the show. Caller, I'm so sorry. I don't think I have enough time. I got to get through the text line. And since we were talking about bodily autonomy, I gathered some stories last night that speak to bodily autonomy, sexual violence, and vulnerable communities, right? In yesterday's Tribune, child rights activist calls for court reforms. Tavari Smith, an attorney and activist, said the country's current system re-traumatizes victims, with children sometimes recounting their ordeal to a parent, police, doctors, the Ministry of Social Services, and prosecutors before testifying again in court. And that's if they're not made to do a confrontation where the police bring the victim into a room with the accused, right? Another headline, no more hiding, confronting the predator culture in the Bahamas. This is actually an editorial in the Nassau Guardian from the 23rd of September by Siobhan Hollis, child advocate, co-founder of Our Children Alliance. And then from yesterday's Tribune, man charged with unlawful sex with underage stepdaughter. From Tuesday's Tribune, man charged with rape of 71-year-old woman. From Tuesday's Tribune, man accused of raping 19-year-old girl at residence on Charles Saunders Highway. The 20th of September, man remanded for flashing woman stealing $10. On the 20th of September, again, police investigate suicide attempt at school. From the 20th of September, 180 child sex abuse cases reported to Crisis Center in past year. They report that 180 children aged between 2 and 17 were referred for sexual assault over the past 11 months. And then from June, mothers prostituting girls to get bills paid, LaRota says. And June 3rd, man convicted of raping 9-year-old girl. And I wanted to read those headlines into the record so people can understand that these conversations are taking place as a part of a strategy or an attempt to create and eradicate sexual violence taking root in our communities. Also, just quickly, the text line. Something has to be said of how people would rather be spoken to by politicians or by church pastors, but not really seek out equitable forums like Equality Bahamas. Those governance standards workshops are so engaging. People need to understand that Equality Bahamas really values everyone's input and do a great job making a space to talk constructively about issues here that isn't just shouting at a wall. Say good morning, Aaron. Mr. Strawn's dad was my headmaster, D.W. Davis, and him and Mr. Hannah, those, they never played. And like the caller said, him and the age, I got you. He's saying that things haven't changed significantly over the time frame when I asked the caller when was he in school. Here's another text. This is so funny. I remember going to school in the 80s and 90s, and it was insisted that we could not wear high fades, etc., but the Indian and light-skinned students could wear their hair any way they wanted, and no one said anything. I'm sorry I didn't get to all of the texts this morning, but thank you guys for joining the conversation, Ms. Wallace. Thank you for joining me again. And I would say to everybody, Ms. Wallace, tell them where they could get their green bandana to support abortion rights.
You can join the Green Wave by dropping by Rabble Bookshop, which is open on Thursdays and Saturdays, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. We have great bandanas printed with a design by Margot Bethel featuring the butterfly pea flower. And we can tell you more about it when you're in store Thursday and Saturday, 11 to 3.
Awesome. Thank you for joining me again, Ms. Wallace. And to the audience, thank you for joining the conversation. You guys stay tuned because Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Newry is up next.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.